As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Movies That Made Me, with your hosts, Josh Olson
and Joe Dante.
Yes, I hope you got the message. About a minute after we talked, I got a phone call from the woman at Movies Unlimited, and she got an email from her, and she said, "Oh, they've just added the Blu-ray, so
okay,
the film is coming out on Blu-ray." Which, that was crazy.
But I've talked to several people who saw it in theaters last week.
Yes, and it's playing theaters here. We should, actually, I should. Why don't we talk. We are very excited to be talking with the Danish filmmaker Anders Thomas Jensen. Sort of, I guess, first burst on our scene here in the States, because, of course, the world doesn't revolve around us as much as we think it does, but won an Oscar for a wonderful short film called Election Night, has written and made several of the films in the Dogma movement, including Mifune with Paprika Steen, who has been a guest on our show, and actually a couple times, and is the writer-director of... I can't think of a movie. I mean, I love films. That's why we do the show, and why Joe does the show. And my wife and I watched Riders of Justice a couple of weeks ago. And I, sadly, I'm not one of the people who saw it in a theater. I should apologize in advance for that. And I was anticipating, just from the trailer, I thought, at the very least, this is just going to be a really good Mads Mikkelsen action film, revenge movie. And it certainly satisfies on that level. It is so much more than that. It is funny. It is touching. It is such an incredible mixture of tonalities and ideas. I mean, it is. I'm not exaggerating. I turned to Nancy. I was like, "Is this like the best movie I've seen in years?" And she was just with her jaw on the floor. I mean, I was knocked out. And after I sort of recovered, I was like, "Okay, we're getting that guy. I need to talk to that guy." I want to find out what kind of movies he likes. And it's such a thrill to have you. And I want to, I know Paprika put in a good word for us, so I want to give a shout out to her as well, because we love her. And thank you. It's just there are times when I wish we did a show where we actually did talk about our guests' work, because I could talk to you all afternoon. But but we won't. We won't talk about your work anymore. I apologize for even bringing it up.
I wouldn't go that far.
But it really is. And if you have a chance, and I guess it's still in theaters, right?
It is indeed in theaters.
Yeah, yeah, which is incredible, because we're finally opening up again. And if you have a chance to see it in a theater, do. If you don't, just stream it, watch it on VOD. It's phenomenal. I can't oversell it. It's I don't even want to say what I say. I don't want to give any more away. Just go do it. But anyway, Anders, thank you. Hello. Coming to us from Copenhagen.
Hi.
you're what kind of, I don't know where to begin, but sort of, I guess, just in essence, like what kind of movies make you tick? Where do you come from in terms of the films you love?
Well, I mean, I know it's a cliche, but I really love all movies except for perhaps romantic comedies. I also like movies from different countries, but of course, I grew up with American movies. That's where it all started. Because they were, I grew up in a small town where they wouldn't play French films there. For instance, it would only be like Actually, I think the first movie I saw in the local theater was Star Wars. So the first many years were American films. And also because then, you know, we got a VCR when I was about 11, 12. Mm-hmm. And then the only films available again was French films. American films.
American films, really? Okay.
So it's very much American. It's a yeah. So I guess it's I suppose it's the same as you. I mean, it's probably a lot of the same films, right?
And I assume that domination of sort of the world culture is still happening. I mean, I know it is, I guess, but I feel like there's probably more variety, a little more variety available.
Well, there's a lot of variety, but I have four kids, and I can see they can choose anything, like Asian films, and it's there. It's but still there. It's they're watching Stranger Things, right?
Right.
But it's still dominant.
I think all this variety kind of came along with streaming, because you know there are only so many theaters in a town, and they're likely to play you know whatever the box office hits are. And now we are not shackled to that anymore. I mean, we lose the ability to enjoy a movie with an audience because we're watching it on a screen at home. But the panoply of world cinema that is available right now is much wider than it's ever been in my lifetime. In fact, there's too many movies to even, you know, figure out. I mean, it's like, what are we going to watch tonight? Well, just pick a country. You know, and they're all there. And so the variety is much wider, I think, than it was certainly when I was growing up.
Yeah. And I mean, there's also something, I mean, now it's because you are Americans, you have such, and there's so many American films. So I guess I think that's in a broad sense with all culture. Because you are such a huge culture yourself. When we are from Denmark, we are very small. We're 5 million people. So you sort of, which is good, you sort of get to pick and choose from the best, you know, because we don't have that many authors or musicians. So you have to turn your eyes to the whole world, right? So that's but that's later on. Back then it was Steven Spielberg, George Lucas that dominated the cinema. And I mean, the first film, I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark. That movie, I saw it in the cinema and it blew me away, because there's also to understand exactly why, I think you have to explain that in Denmark there's a subsidized system where the government will subsidize films that are very artistic and very, very boring. Very often they're like, you know, there's a lot of it's, how do you say, they have a strong moral, and they teach you how to be a good citizen. I'm making it sound like we're like a communist country, but we're not. But it's almost. But that's one side of the industry. Then there's the other side of it that actually is an industry that makes money, and they they're very, very like very slapstick comedies. I grew up. I thought that either a movie was very, very slapstick or it was pretty boring, and suddenly I saw first Star Wars, but especially Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I guess you can say that, because it played in the cinema for a while and then it disappeared and my life was empty, but I got hold of a bootleg copy for the VCR and I saw it. I think I know all the dialogue in the movie. I mean, I could so I've seen it so many times. And I just wanted to become a film director. I watched it every day when I got home from school, because in a long period, and that's the whole idea of creating a world like this. And I mean, the level of entertainment and the whole universe was just crazy for me that this existed.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, that was a pretty groundbreaking film for us too, I think, when it came out. But yeah, not to that degree.
My experience with Danish films was pretty much limited to Reptilicus. and pictures with Dirk Passer and Ovis Bregol, and you know, those kind of pictures. They were, you know, bought by American companies and repurposed. So I really didn't get into the Danish film archive until much, much later, you know, in like the 70s and 80s, I started, you know, going back into films from that area. But they were except for the ones that had been, you know, repurposed for commercial purposes, there really weren't very many that were released here.
No, also because we didn't do many. And to be frank, there weren't many. Of course, we had like iconic Dreyer and, I mean, like, pioneers in cinema, but there weren't many. And people, I don't hope many Danes will hear this, because there weren't many back then. It's funny, you know, Reptilicus, because it's there's an actor called Ben Meiding who's the lead in it. It was his first part, and I can't remember how he got it. That's a fun story there too. But he thought it was forgotten, and then he got to some film festival, I can't remember where, in the United States, and actually he had like a group of fans waiting for him. I think it's alongside Plan 9 from Outer Space, the Ed Wood film, it's been recognized as the worst film ever made.
But
it's got Tivoli Nights in it, you know?
Yeah, Tivoli Nights.
We're getting into the weeds here.
Very esoteric. Yeah, Joe, wasn't there? Is it Reptilicus one of those ones? If we get even further into the weeds, the novelization was very R-rated.
Well, there was a company called Monarch Books, which put out novelizations that tied in with various pictures that were mainly aimed at kids, but the novelizations were incredibly dirty and filthy, and there was tremendous amounts of sex and very graphically described. And Reptilicus was one of them. I mean, Brides of Dracula was another one. I mean, this company was very popular. Parents bought them for their kids, not knowing that this was actually close to porn.
Because who would read them before giving them their kids? You've probably seen the movie. You thought it was that's wonderful. Wonderful. Wow. Well, Anders, it's great. What's next?
Well, then I got a bit older. I discovered like Scorsese and all the, and actually I really also, Inner Space, I really like that movie. So I'm glad to be sitting here with you. That was really a great movie. The movie Amazon Women on the Moon. I really like that movie too. We would like a group of.
You saw that in Denmark?
Oh, I saw it many times. Did you do the, it's called Reckless Youth. Did you
Reckless
do that?
Youth, yes, that was mine.
That's my favorite. There's a shadow. There's like an establishing shot where the guy, he walks through, he gets sick and he walks into a wall, but there's like a shadow of, it's a ladder, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a ladder. And it's the same set. Every set in the movie is actually the same set that's been moved around and redressed. But that's, you know, we did our homework. I mean, that's the way those movies really looked in the 30s.
Okay. Yeah. That was really funny.
I have to ask, did you see it? You didn't see that. Did you see that in theaters or did you see it on video?
Oh, no, nobody saw it in theaters.
Okay, I don't know.
Even here.
That's not in theaters. I saw it. But
never know. You never know.
No, but we were like in high school. We were like big fans of Monty Python and the airplane movies and stuff. And that Amazon Women on the Moon had something like down that road, right?
Yeah, it was a Kentucky Fried Movie ripoff. So it was a series of those kind of movies with sketches and things.
Yeah. So, next was David Lean, where I. I saw, and that's Lawrence of Arabia is a movie that sort of stuck with me. I see it every 10th year, and it's I have a new experience with it. And luckily, they have a 70mm copy of it here and a cinema that runs it every like 10 years. So, that was something completely else, discovering like this, what you can do in cinema. I mean, And it's so tough to talk about these things because it's very much an emotion. It's a feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. So I haven't. It's not as if I've analyzed it and can say a lot of clever things about that. But it's just again, I also had something with the main character that also followed me. It's the first time I fell for a complicated main character. That's mm-hmm. Lawrence is a sadist and he's a complicated man. Not like Indiana Jones at all. I mean,
yes.
And something in that character just And I think almost all the movies I really really like, they have protagonists that are not that likable, or that you get to like, or that where there's a challenge in like. And I can a lot of times when I write for myself, I you know, if you throw you know that too. I mean, if you throw somebody in a wheelchair in scene one, you're sure people will like them, right? So, you sort of feel you're cheating when you do stuff like that, because I really like to. And I mean, in all five films I've directed myself, it's they're really not likable in the first half of the film, or they have issues that are not that you wouldn't like. So I guess Lawrence, it's the first time I stumbled upon that you can actually do a main character that is
the funny. Very, yeah, it's. I mean, I remember like the first time I saw Lawrence, you're so taken. I mean, by everything, and especially O'Toole's performance. I think it was around the third time somebody points out that he's kind of awful, that it sort of sunk into me. You're like, oh, I guess so. Yeah, I'm so drawn to him.
He's kind of crazy.
Yeah, sure. You know. Yeah, We love crazy in movies.
You know, it's a much better movie on your iPhone, by the way.
Isn't there like a whole establishing scene in the Officers Club up in the first act where they basically tell the audience he's awful. That's
Yeah. Well, they set you up to meet this awful person, and then Peter O'Toole strides in, and you're just like, oh, he's wonderful. Yeah, in fact, I mean, there's a lot of that in Riders of Justice. Especially the three friends, the three amigos, are so on the surface unappetizing, but you really do. You fall in love with them fairly quickly as they get stranger and darker and more fucked up. That's the kind of wonderful thing.
But I like, I mean, that's I think it's. It's wonderful that you can do that. I mean, I love films myself where characters, because humans are like that. You know, most people aren't that nice. I mean, they have a side that aren't that nice.
Right.
So it's, but still you are able to love them. So it's, it reflects reality.
But then there's the movie star problem, I guess, which is some movie stars are so, you know, the instant Mads steps on screen, I'm just like, I'm going wherever he's going. I don't care what he does. I love him. That was, I would say, my only flaw with Casino Royale. I was like, I'd be okay if this guy killed James Bond. He's kind of great. He's very compelling.
He's great.
So the first time you saw Lawrence, was it in a theater?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I've seen it. I probably have seen it on. But it's a shame to see that movie on a.
Yeah.
But I've seen it in the theater several times, the 70mm copy.
I've definitely mentioned this on the show, I think even recently, but you know, every time a new print of it or whatever comes out on Blu-ray or you know, a new box set, I will buy it and I'll probably watch all the supplemental stuff. But I have never, and I have a giant screen here, I will never watch it on video. I always have to see it in the theater because it's, I don't know.
David Lean, there's one, because sometimes I mentioned that in the Bridge on the River Kwai, and I also really like the German. And my wife points out that why do you only like movies where there are no women?
No.
But still, that's also amazing at that time that you could do a huge budget movie without a female lead. I don't know how they even managed to get that made, because I thought you were supposed to have both, right?
Right. How do you have the love scenes?
Well, then he made up for it with Dr. Zhivago and Ryan.
That's right. Yes, Mountains of Schmaltz. Wow. Well, what's next on your list there?
I mean, on my list, I have put the apartment because I think mostly as a screenwriter, because that's I love that it's like the perfect idea, the perfect setup, and the perfect execution of a screenplay, I think. And I mean, the characters, that you have a comedy where it is a comedy, but there's like this there's this sadness underneath everything. These two lonely people that they basically both of them have given up, right, on somehow on love and on life in such a nice subtle way, and then it's so again, it's the combination of characters and the, I don't know what I'm saying. I should be more articulate.
No, not at all. I get what you're saying. And it's funny because you started by saying you don't like romantic comedies. I guess that is technically a romantic comedy.
But it makes the point.
Yeah.
It hasn't been done as good, I think, since then. So it's one of the first ones I remember. Caught up to me. So from there, I've never seen anyone that I could compare to it. I think it's so good, that movie.
Yeah, no, I think it transcends all of its certainly its genre, and yeah, he was such a great writer. That was one of the ones with Diamond, right, Joe? I assume.
Yeah.
I mean, God, that the run they had as writers with him as a director is just astonishing, and so many different kind of genres and feels and temperaments and I still feel, for all the love that Wilder gets, he does not get his proper due as one of our greatest filmmakers, at least over here.
I think you're right, actually. He should, but he can't get enough. That's probably why.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We want to pause for just a minute to thank our sponsor, moviesunlimited.com, the movie collector's website. They're actually huge fans of our show, which we love because we love all of our listeners. And they feature pretty much every one of the movies we talk about here, except for the incredibly obscure ones that have never been released on video. So you can find them and add them to your collection.
Sure, you can stream a lot of stuff these days. But when you buy your favorites, you watch what you want, when you want, and there's a ton of great content and bonus features like director's commentaries, deleted scenes, and all sorts of goodies that you don't get elsewhere.
They're great. In fact, they're when I was growing up in Philadelphia, we would get the Movies Unlimited catalog because they're from Philly and they're still putting it out. It's this big, giant phone book size thing that has like every movie that's out on video. It's fantastic. So buy your favorites at moviesunlimited.com. You're going to find classics, imports, hard-to-find films, and, of course, tons of new releases. Seriously, they do imports. They do stuff with other regions. They're great. It's a great resource. The prices are fantastic. The choices are endless. Own all the titles you love and enjoy all the bonus features that you just don't get elsewhere.
So if you want to own your own experience, click the Movies Unlimited banner on our website and buy your favorites from hard-to-find films, imports, and more. Go now to moviesunlimited.com, the movie collector's website, where shipping is always free on orders over $50. So feel free to spend lots of money.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to our show.
But if I move on, then I have I put the producers. But again, that's it represents, or how do you say it? It's I could have put other movies on, but I think that's also one of the best ideas for a comedy. But I also had a huge love for these all the Gene Wilder, like what were they? The last remake of Beauchest and Sherlock Holmes, Marden Brother, all these 70s movies, comedies that were really well made. And I've had this thing with comedies that are really good that you don't have to see them. It might sound odd. You can actually, because so many times I have been lying, you know, falling asleep, just putting on one because it's so, I have to say I sleep better when I watch something. So,
comfort food.
Yeah. And, but it's like, if I put one of those on, I won't fall asleep, even though I turn my back to them, because the dialogue and the sound and the bit over the top acting of the characters and everything is, you visualize the film just by hearing it completely, which is quite amazing with those films. I'll suggest everybody tries that. but again, it's a great idea. It's great characters, and it's just so entertaining.
I love what you said about the listening too, because there's that sort of commonly accepted trope that, you know, the great movies you can watch with the sound off and understand what's happening. And I vigorously disagree. I defy anybody to sit and watch The Godfather and have much of an idea of what's happening without the sound. And it also, it gives short shrift to writers. And obviously there's a lot of films that, it's a visual medium, but yeah, so many great movies. And as a kid, when I was growing up, there were a lot of records we had where they had taken, they're mostly classic films. I think most of them were from radio programs, but they would make radio versions of great films, especially back in the 40s. And when I was a kid, not in the 40s, but we had some of these. So I my knowledge of like Key Largo and things like that came from first having heard these radio plays a million times, and they were almost verbatim and you could follow them pretty easily. But it's that may have helped turn me into a writer. I don't know, but yeah. And the producers is just, it's so grand. It's so grand. Cool. What's next?
Well, that's a movie that I could have picked another Coen Brothers films, because I think all their films are great and they all inspired me tremendously. But the Hot Soccer Proxy, again, it's a personal experience I had with, I had this, I think I was early, beginning of my 20s, and I had a girlfriend in Paris, and I'd seen Blood Simple, and I saw that this new movie came out, and I went to see it, actually at a cinema at Champs-Élysées. And when I saw it, I cheated, because in France you can go out and you can actually go into the next, you can see it again. You can go out and not hide, but just go around and go in and see the next show. So I saw it three times in a row. Mm. I mean, I knew that it didn't perhaps succeed on every level, but technically, of course, it was amazing. I mean, it's, and of course the music, I think it's Cacciatore and Spartacus they use in it, but the pictures and the music and the whole, everything, there was everything that should be there was there. The whole theme with the circles and, but I know it didn't really add up. But again, they tried to do something very difficult. They tried to, ironize and at the same time have real emotions. I mean, because it is like it's a big wave to, what do you call, Capra, and I mean, all the Odd Hawks and Capra and all movies. So, and they're very aware of what they're doing, and it's a bit emotionally distant, but then they still try to get emotional, which is of course is why I think a lot of people don't like it, because that it's very hard to succeed with that. But I just the whole technical side of it, and the fact that just doing this movie, and I mean, it I was it's a very very bold movie to do.
I remember because it was sort of Jennifer Jason Leigh was kind of at the peak of her career, I think, and was just remains one of my favorite actresses. And I remember being knocked out that she was clearly, I mean, she's terrific in the film, but she was clearly struggling with that rat-a-tat-tat kind of Katharine Hepburn, Rosalind Russell delivery. It just gave me a whole new appreciation for those actresses and actresses back then who had to do that just naturally. And it also feels like some people are born to it, because Bruce Campbell, who's a wonderful presence and not, you know, not the great thespian per se, I thought he did it naturally. He was amazing in that. But that's such a hard style to capture, I think, for an actor.
Can you imagine getting a picture with that title made today?
Yeah. What is it? It's you know, it's for kids.
It's a proxy. What's kind of a proxy? It's a hot second proxy. What's a proxy?
Racing Arizona. Isn't there there's a delivery guy or something? He comes from a company where it says hot soda. But they must have known that they were going to do that at some point.
Oh, that's right. Something. They do that a lot. It's so funny how their little things.
Well, that builds fun. It builds their world.
Yeah. The cone shared universe. It's hilarious. Cool. Well, what is next? These are great. I want to go back and watch all of them now.
Well, next is Groundhog Day. Again, I think it's. I mean, this because of the script, but also because of the. It's like the perfect. It's the perfect metaphor and coming together of your theme in that movie. But again, you know, it's when you talk about movies like this, it's going to be, it will be a bit banal, because it is very banal when you analyze it. And I guess that's why we do movies, right? So we try to hide how banal the theme is, why we spend years wrapping it up. But first of all, it's a perfect metaphor for like being stuck in your life, right? In Groundhog Day. I suppose everybody who listens to this know what it's about, right? It's
especially after a year of quarantine, yes. We've all just lived it.
No, but the whole structure of the movie and the idea that we all know how it is, the feeling of reliving every day. So it's very relatable. And then the whole idea of him that he has to, you know, but again, it's kind of sounds so banal when it's, that if you don't, your life will become meaningless if you don't learn to care about others. I mean, right. It sounds cheesy now, but there's something, it's just a great, great comedy.
But that fits in with your paradigm before about the idea of the character that you don't, you know, I don't warm to at the beginning of the movie, because they have a lot of problems. And then as it goes on, you know, they're redeemed by their experience.
Yeah, exactly. That's also part of it. But
and perfectly cast too, because we especially at that point in his career, still to this day, Bill Murray is that guy. We love watching him be an asshole. So you're already in. You'll go for that part of the ride happily, even though he's wildly unappetizing. But I love what you say. Yeah, it's like it's probably a terrible thing to do to a lot of movies, is try to explain what they are, because you're right. It's there's a term that they're always using here, at least with pretty much anything that they're on the fence about. But they go, well, but it's execution dependent, which of course everything is. But yeah, you're right. It's like it's a movie about a guy who wakes up every day and realizes he has to become a better person, and he does. And that's about
it. He has
it.
To overcome the fact that he has to listen to the same Sonny and Cher song every
year. Right. But it's just so well done, every scene, and it's so heartfelt. And then there's that sort of unexpected joy of watching Bill Murray become a human being.
The only minor thing that could happen, he's way funnier. He's so much more fun when he's a being.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, if the film's working, you're happy to see him sort of warm up, and you know, you're rooting for the two of them.
And that was apparently a fairly contentious movie on the set. It was not a fun time for everybody.
Oh, really?
Lots of disagreements and problems and stuff. But you know, they often say that the movies that have the most difficulty getting made are the ones that turn out the best, and the ones that you have such a great time making are the ones that come out and crickets chirp in the theater.
Sometimes.
My generality is that one's.
I know you tend to get into fist fights with your leads on a regular basis, Joe. I've heard the stories. So
yeah. You can't let these people push you around. You know?
Yeah. But that really is. It's also a movie that kind of, I believe, is there a precedent? Kind of created its own subgenre. I can't think of another movie.
Well, there's certainly been a couple of pictures with the same plot.
There have been many since.
Action movie.
There's a new one. There's a new one out right now, Boss Level, with Frank Grillo and Mel Gibson, that is actually shockingly entertaining. And it is. It's an action movie version of it, where a guy has to fight his way to the bad guy, and he keeps dying and waking up the next day and figuring out new ways to do it. And it's actually wildly entertaining and very fun.
And what was that Tom Cruise movie where he keeps dying?
The one with 12 different titles.
With that lousy title, and then they decided to call it Kill Me Again, or Kill Me a Couple of Times.
Wash, Die, Rinse Again. That's a terrific film. And Palm Springs recently, which was a romantic comedy where two people are stuck in that, actually more than two, but they're stuck in that loop. And it is one of those things that you walk out going, God, I wish I'd thought of that. And then, you know, if you're clever, you conjure with it long enough and come up with something that does it justice, but becomes its own thing. Yeah, I love that kind of thing. I love a movie where you walk out and go, God damn it, I wish I had made that.
Mm. Yeah, and I know because I lived a couple of years in L.A., and I'm used to, like, the change in rhythm and stuff. And in L.A., you can see where you would get the idea.
Exactly, yes.
Years that has gone, and it's like, same day.
Yeah, well, try Los Angeles in quarantine. It's even more of that.
We're on the cusp. We're maskless in many areas outdoors, and of course, if you've been vaccinated, then you're in pretty good shape, except that nobody knows who's vaccinated and who's not. You have a little card that you bring with you, but that's only to get on the airplane and stuff. We're in a spot right now where things are kind of going well, but there are other places in the world that things are going very, very badly.
How is it there?
Well, we weren't hit too hard, it's opening up to. It's everything is back to almost everything. That you can't have like 60,000 people at a rock concert. And that's about it.
Right.
Still wear masks, and most half of us are almost vaccinated.
Yeah, we're going back to movie theaters, but there's still limited capacity, and you have to sit.
It's really like every second.
Something like that, yeah. But it's nice. I actually finally went to a movie a couple of weeks ago, and it was I wanted to cry. It was so wonderful.
Next is Barry Lyndon, by Kruger.
Yes.
Because, when I saw that film, I loved it, and I was all the time thinking, this shouldn't be working. Why is this working? And again, you have a main character. Basically you have a man who does not want anything, but he wants it all. He wants to be, he just wants to, how do you say, advance.
Right.
Get to the top, which is good, but he's not likable. And he doesn't react emotionally to anything. And part of that is also the way it's done. With the actor, what's his name, Ryan O'Neill. So I was floored by the, and I know why it's working. It's because it's brilliantly made. I know that, but still, it's amazing that you can do this and keep me watching for so long, where a character shows so little interest which is amazing. So I just had to put it on the list. What more can you say? But that's basically it. It's just a movie I think about every time I start doing something. I think about you can always just tell, if you get your script back and they say that the character you need to develop him more, you can just say that he executed like Barry Lyndon.
I am so ashamed. That was the last Kubrick movie I ever saw, and I had came out when I was a kid, and if you're a child, that there's nothing about that movie that looks interesting in a way that Clockwork Orange looks pretty cool when you're 11 years old, as much as it's not appropriate. And I finally saw it. It showed at the Dome a few years ago. And I've just been kicking myself ever since, because it's, and you should know by now, it's Kubrick. It's not going to disappoint. And it's amazing. And what I was not prepared for either was how funny it is. It doesn't present itself as a movie that's going to give you a lot of laughs. And it's got,
and it also overcomes the problem of having the narrator tell you what's going to happen, just like in the book, before you see
before it. Before it happens, yeah.
You know, so you go, well, where's the suspense? You know, well, that's not what it's about. It's yeah, not it's about not the suspense.
No.
Yeah, and I hate when people dump on Ryan O'Neal in that film, because I think he's a decent actor, and he's done some terrific performances, but I think he's perfect in that. I mean, as you say, he's a bit of a slate. And
I think he's exactly what Kubrick was looking for.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes, exactly.
Gonzo, you see exactly what he wants you to see, and exactly he tells you what's going to happen, which is sort of crazy.
Yeah. I can't imagine he did that thing where he makes the actor do 40 takes for a scene, though, because what would you be looking for from Ryan O'Neal?
More blankness.
More blankness, yeah. Yeah, I absolutely love it. I love it to death.
Then I put on Amadeus by Forman, because that is I've been working a couple of times on a script for biopics, you know. And that's so hard, because it's very tough to do a good biopic, and not many good ones are made. A lot of biopics are made, but there's so many cases where you can see that it's. But this movie is just so to do a story of a real person, and then say, okay, we have to do a story about a genius, and then get the idea to okay. Let's turn it around and do a story about what a genius does to a normal person. And then turn it into which is still a really good story about a genius.
Right.
And that whole idea of inventing, no, Salieri, I think, is a real, who was the composer at the, in Vienna, I think, or something. He existed, but to just invent that he's this man getting chewed up by envy, and he's such a beautiful character that he hates Mozart, he hates his guts, but he loves music more. So he's like torn. So it's for me, it's one of my favorite all time characters, Salieri.
It's a movie in its own right. I mean, if that makes sense, because yeah, I'm with you. Biopics that are just here's the life of a great person. Are so hard to pull off just conceptually. It's not enough, you know. It's like,
it's easier to do a biopic on a person who's flawed. I mean, that's, you know, if you do Ed Wood, you know, which is a great biopic,
sure.
Is about, but the subject is not a character who is accomplished. It's a character who's trying to accomplish things that he doesn't have the talent for, and that's kind of poignant in itself. So that gets you through it. But in Amadeus, I mean, Thomas Hulse plays Mozart as such a ninny that, you know, we don't like him either, you know, because he's a jerk. And this is that laugh alone. And so it is Salieri's picture. I mean, it's about a guy who just can't get where he wants to go. And he sees this other guy who doesn't deserve it, but has more talent. God gave him more talent somehow. And it's, of course, it would eat him up. I mean, it's a terrific story.
Yeah,
it is.
But that's the focus, as opposed to simply here's. Although my God, I'd say here's one that does it so well, we never even think of it as a biopic that you mentioned. I mean, Lawrence of Arabia is a biopic.
Yeah, that's right.
But you just don't think of it that way, you know. It's.
That's true. But again, there you have the that's the like the positive side of doing biopics is when you, like Joe says, if you have a flawed character, you tend to bring that, you bring that more into a story than you would have otherwise, right? Than with Lawrence, in Lawrence's case.
Yeah.
But it also takes some liberties just to say, I mean, Mozart was hugely successful, I mean, throughout, I mean, he was like celebrated all over, and the movie just takes these liberties to say that he was like also, I mean, that he had this down and not recognized enough, and I mean to dramatize it,
yeah.
Which is it's just for everyone who's doing a biopic, see Amadeus, because often you're very confined to reality and how it was, and of course it's also easier to do a biopic with people that's several hundred years ago, because you won't have them calling you up,
suing you, threatening to kill you.
So of course that's there's an issue there. But anyways, it's I love Salieri and that movie.
Yeah, I have a character I've been trying to crack for a million years. It's a fascinating. I'm almost tempted to say his name and then just ruin it. Let somebody else figure it out. But the problem I keep coming up against, and this is he's been dead for 100 years, but is that it's impossible to find any meaningful and significant flaw in his life. He was this unique individual who sort of did the right thing at all times and was incredibly accomplished at what he did. And there were pretty much, you know, for his early years, there were no bumps in his road. And you just, I keep running up against the fact that it's an incredibly boring story. it's not enough to just be great at a thing, which is kind of, I'm amazed though, like they pulled it off in the Buddy Holly story, which is, you know, about a normal kid who picked up a guitar, wrote some amazing songs, and then got on the wrong airplane. And that's pretty much his entire life. And yet it is entertaining, but yeah, it's a good film. It's not one of the greats. It's not Lawrence. It's not Amadeus. Yeah, you need those flaws. You need those interesting characters to bounce off of.
That's why it's been so hard to make a good movie about the life of Christ. It's true. I mean, try to sit through the greatest story ever told. I mean, it is, you know, it's reverent and it's, you know, meaningful and it's nicely made, but it's just the most boring movie. It goes on forever. And every shot is a wide shot, and it just doesn't work.
No.
Yeah, and then you're also like, if you try to sort of, you know, fictionalize it and give him a few interesting flaws, you're going to get in trouble with a lot of people.
Well, then you get Jesus Christ Superstar.
And change the ending.
That's right.
Change the ending. That's definitely the best part.
Well, you know, then you have Last Temptation, which is, God, fantastic. Cool. What's next, sir?
Next, I put on Little Shop of Horrors, Frank Oz.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Also, because I really like musicals too. I think they are. I think we need more good musicals. Why did I put that on? I mean, it's I like the I also have this love for like Faustian, how do you say it in English?
Faustian
stories with a happy ending, because a lot of times they do not end happy, and it actually does here. So it's the story about this nerd who finds this flower and he has to. He sort of has to feed it blood and then feed it, you know, to commit crimes to in order to feed it while it helps him become someone.
Yes.
It's a very traditional story, but what I really like is the music also. I mean, it's Howard Ashman and Alan Menken.
Have you seen the original movie that it's based on? The 2.5 hour movie? 2.5 hour, 2.5 day, I meant.
But a day, yes. It's a very short film. Yeah.
Where Jack Nicholson is very, very young.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that one. I like the Frank Oz version.
Well, Frank had a lot more money.
Yeah.
You know, that picture used to end with the plants taking over. And there was a big expensive ending where they take over there on the Brooklyn Bridge or whatever. And for whatever reason they cut it and reshot it and took it back into the little room that most of the picture takes place in. And I understand that there is, I think it was on YouTube for a while.
It's on the Blu-ray.
And now they've put it back together sort of and put it on the Blu-ray, which I think was a better ending.
But is that, it's originally, it was a Broadway play, right?
Yeah.
No, it started as an off-Broadway play because it was, you know, it was such a small movie. It was a cult movie that people saw on television on Chiller Theater. And it had this, you know, it was a movie that made no money theatrically, but everybody saw it on television. And so then the title was in people's minds. And then when they decided to make a musical out of it, they tried it out off Broadway. And then it was became more and more popular. And then it became, you know, this giant moneymaker thing.
Okay. Well, I have to find the alternate ending.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
it's
on the current Blu-ray.
It's pretty cool.
I also love it's kind of the opposite. It's the reverse journey of what you've talked about before, because Rick Moranis is, as much as he's a sad sack in the film, he's very likable. He's Rick Moranis in the beginning, and he becomes worse and worse and worse as the movie.
But I like that too. As long as people become likable at some point.
And as long as they're dislikable at some point in the film, yeah. That's my only criteria. Good luck getting a studio film made in America in 2021.
Yeah.
Now imagine that alternate universe where you're getting the notes back. Like, we like him too much. You need a scene where he does something awful.
He needs to kick a dog.
He needs to kick a dog. Yeah. I think that'll be a happier world, I think, if we got away with that more often. That's fantastic.
Next up is a French film called En Profit. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, love it.
Oh, that's a great movie. You finally got to see a French movie.
There's so many French films I like, but since this was it's a US show, I wouldn't go there. But I thought I would choose one. And this movie is when I think it came out in 9 or 10 or something. And when I saw it, it's the best, because to me, I know there's been a lot of discussions because it's called A Prophet, and is it a political comment to what France is about to become and everything. And the director has said it's not. So it's, but to me, it's just one of the best coming of age stories I've ever seen. Mm. With one of the best characters, and it's my favorite prison movie, and it is a coming of age story because in the start scene, I think, or the beginning of the film, it's a man trying to grow a beard, right? It's a boy who comes in,
right?
He's teamed up with his gang of hoodlums, but the journey to get there is just amazing. Actually, the only thing I can say that's a little say bad about it is the title. I think the title is weird because it confuses a lot of things in it. But the action sequences in this movie, they are so real. And so it's done so nasty that it's very, I really, really love violence on movies. I love to watch it, and I love to, also because I think it's very often, it's also very funny when it's over the top. But here I had to turn my face, which almost never happens.
Wow.
Because it's done like a, it's like a seeing a documentary from a butcher hall when he, it's so rough and so real. And really, it takes your breath away. So, great movie.
It's an amazing film with some great performances. I know it's one of those movies you can't oversell, I think. And he, Odiard, is that how you pronounce it? Has done some other terrific. He did what was Joe? He did a Western a couple of years ago, The Sisters Brothers.
Yes,
which was also shockingly good. Really, really interesting filmmaker. And Prophets. I love it. I need to go back and watch it again.
The detail in the main character that he's doing is amazing. He's also a great actor.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I was interested to hear, because, and I want to pick your brain for a minute about a filmmaker. I was wondering if Clint Eastwood was going to show up or not on your list, because there's I don't think you can watch Riders of Justice and not be reminded of some of his better films. There's a little bit of Unforgiven to it, and a hint of one of the things I always love about Josie Wales is that Josie Wales is a guy who's deeply invested in being a kind of taciturn Clint Eastwood hero, but is constantly being saddled with these kind of eccentric weirdo characters and is forced to form a family. So I kind of thought about that occasionally when I was watching your film, and then of course Unforgiven, And
even on the list at some point.
But yeah, and I was like, does this guy love Clint or does he have some issues? I was just, I would be interested to hear what your thoughts are about some of those films. I mean,
a lot of his films.
Yeah.
Unforgiven is definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, if anything, if I had to sort of shorthand your movie, it's you managed to bring a lot of laughs into a kind of Unforgiven scenario.
I like every. I mean, when there's a horse in them, I like Clint Eastwood films.
Yep. Might want to stay away from Joe Kidd. That's a little boring if you haven't seen it. But other than that, I agree entirely. Yeah, there's kind of that pre. I feel like Unforgiven. After that, he turned into a different filmmaker.
But I like some of those movies. But I just think that also. The Dirty Harry and they're like two kind of people, I think. The ones that like Dirty Harry and the ones that like him on a horse, right?
Oh no, I like both. It's just, to me, it's like I think somehow Unforgiven made him respectable. I think that's a terrible thing to happen to a great filmmaker.
We don't have to worry, it won't happen to us.
That's right. You must never be respectable. At least if you're American, because I would say, Anders, that you're a very respectable filmmaker and somehow you've managed to survive that. And
I don't know. I'm trying. Yeah.
Yeah. are you working on something now? Is it the biopic or you're?
We are working a little on a biopic, but I have this, I am foremost a screenwriter. So I work as a screenwriter and then it becomes too lonely and at some point I'll have a script that nobody else will do and I'll go and do it myself. I'm back writing with my co-writer. I have a co-writer right now, Nick Arcel, who we just did a new film for him, which is actually a biopic where we very inspired by Amadeus. We changed everything, but we're not allowed to say anything with the title because then they will,
okay. People will. can you tell us who it's about or
what?
Can you tell us who it's about?
No, because then it's then everybody. I mean, it's
that would tend to give it away. It seems.
I guess. It's not Jesus, is it?
No, I can say who it's not about. I'm back to writing. I like that. I like this. How do you say? I don't know the word in English, but the change between after you've directed you, for me anyway, I don't want to see anyone for a year because you've had so much contact with people asking you things you don't. and then if you write for a couple of years, you want to get out of the house. So I think it's a good way to.
That's a great balance. If you're fortunate enough, that's wonderful. Well, look, I can't wait to see what you do next. And seriously, if you're this is coming out, the film is still in some theaters, and it is, I believe, on VOD. It's coming out soon on DVD and Blu-ray. I can't endorse this movie enough. I absolutely love it.
It's Riders of Justice, and it's not a Western.
That is correct. But it does have some Western elements. Great, great film. Oh, well, Anders, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it. I say this all the time. One of the joys of this show is I get to see a movie that knocks us out, and then we get to like stalk the filmmakers and make them talk to us about movies. And it's always a good time, but this was a blast. So thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Our show was recorded from several well-stocked bunkers. We can't wait to get back to beautiful downtown Burbank. We're the official podcast of trailersfromhell.com, the best damn movie website there is. Our engineer is the composer Don Barrett, who also transmogrified, produced, and created our theme song. This is Josh Olson for The Movies That Made Me. Stay safe out there, folks.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.